endless men whose age will be not to defend some ancient creed, but to live out the laws of Christ in every thought and word and deed. God send us men alert and quick, His lofty precepts to translate, until the laws of Christ become the laws and habits of the state.
Welcome to God Send Us Men Ministries with evangelist and missionary to America, Charlie Stewart. We challenge you to open your Bible and follow along with today's message. Prove all things, hold fast that which is good, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. To contact us or read and listen to more teachings online for free, visit GodSendUsMen.com. And now, here is evangelist and missionary to America, Charlie Stewart.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for tuning into the message this morning. I received some updates from Doug this week, and on the good side, he says his leg is continuing to heal nicely, but now he's starting to have some seizures, and his first report was about one seizure, and then Mindy contacted Teresa and said that he had had three in one day. So we need to pray that they can find the source of the seizures and then find the remedy for them. Doug says he believes it's due to damage to his body from the past. And I certainly understand that. I'm sure all of us that are getting older understand that and even empathize with it because we can surely identify with the same sentiments. But you need to listen up, young people. When you're young, you think you're invincible and you can do anything, you can eat anything, drink anything, and there's never an issue. Well, the issues may not be noticeable right away, but time will eventually catch up to all of you. And I know that when I was younger, you know, we all heard warnings about things that we were being fed, you know, food-wise. And to be clear, I'm not talking about Doug right now. He didn't even elaborate on what he called his past. I'm speaking generally now. When I was younger, you know, I heard the warnings about Coca-Cola and Pepsi and Sprite and all those things. And when I was younger, I think the sweetener for those products was sugar. Today, the makers of things like that, I mean, have moved beyond simple sugar, and only God knows what they're putting in those products now. But guys and girls, I mean, if it looks like antifreeze that you'd put in your car, well, I highly doubt that that's what God intended for you to drink to put in your body. I mean, Gatorade's claim to fame is that it was invented in a laboratory. That just sounds so contradictory to what God intended. I don't understand why we don't think there could be a problem with putting those things into our bodies. And yes, I get it. I mean, I know there are things that all of us put into our bodies that we shouldn't do. But the problem is, it's everywhere. I mean, the food in the world today, and I mean what's found in the grocery stores, most restaurants, I mean what most people consume, is controlled by just a couple huge conglomerates. And they're concerned with how much money they make, not whether what they produce is healthy and good. You know, Teresa and I watched a YouTube video about Nestle's a couple of weeks ago. And shocking is hardly the word to describe what that company, and you really can't say what it has become, because when you see the history of the company revealed in that video, I mean, you see that it was pretty much evil from the very beginning. I mean, what they did to the family, to babies, to mothers with baby formula, I mean, it's one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen in my life. And what they've done to the water supply in countless communities around the world is just staggering. I mean, you should watch the video for yourself. And of course, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of you have seen it already. But we are, I mean, most people are, feeding our bodies with food that's produced by people who only care about enriching themselves. They don't care about who gets hurt in the process. And I realize, I mean, a person can get so consumed, I mean, to the point of being overwhelmed at trying to eat right, trying to drink right. I mean, it can almost make you crazy. And I'm of the opinion that isn't a good thing either. But we do need to try to just do the very best that we can. I mean, we need to be vigilant as we can. without driving ourselves nuts in the process. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to say that you should do what I do in this regard. I mean, Lord knows I've got my own health issues. But I've not had a Coke, a Pepsi, Sprite, or anything like that in almost 35 years. And when I found out that Coke has the same pH as battery acid, I mean, that was it for me. When I found out that Coke will digest raw meat, I mean, it'll remove tar from the sides of your cars. I mean, it can be used to remove corrosion from battery terminals. I mean, that was pretty much it for me. And today, I mean, I drink nothing but water. I drink pure apple juice, grape juice, orange juice, and some milk. But mainly, I just drink water. I know I don't eat as well as I should, but I do all I can. I mean, if the label says that it contains bioengineered ingredients, I don't eat it. Teresa doesn't buy it, and Teresa doesn't eat much corn. But what she buys is only organic, and the packaging specifically says it's not GMO, doesn't contain bioengineered ingredients and all that stuff. We need to realize that war has been declared on common people in every aspect of life. You know, I understand the Bible says no weapon formed against us will prosper, and that's great, and I believe that. But I absolutely believe that the snake handler, religious nuts that have no idea what Jesus meant by handling serpents, I mean, many of them found out that getting bit by snakes did them in. I don't have all the answers as to what God meant by no weapon formed against his people will prosper. But I know that if bullets were flying, I'd be ducking for cover. You know, and I just wish the younger people that I know would pay more attention to what they're putting in their bodies. I mean, we're not dealing with nice people in the food industry. And at least in regards to Nestle's, I mean, they haven't been nice as far back as the 1800s. It's just hard to imagine what they're about today. And of course, pharmaceutical drugs. I mean, that should just go without saying, but it doesn't. It doesn't go without saying because it needs to be talked about. And I'm just amazed that people in the world can see an ad about a drug, and more than half of the ad is about the side effects, including death. I mean, yet people just don't seem to be concerned about that at all. It's just crazy to me. I mean, surely people who claim to be God's people aren't falling for those things. Well, changing gears just a little before we get into the message, I saw a headline the other day that I thought might be a little interesting, so I bit and read. The headline was, USA Today, for gay and transgender people, these are the most and least welcoming states. So I opened the page just because I wanted to see if there was a list and to see where they said Missouri was on the list. And certainly not because I care particularly about Missouri, but simply because I'm affected by Missouri by proximity. Well, I didn't find a list, nor did I find anything of value, of course, in that article, except for one little thing. There was a quote in there from the, quote, governor. And do not mistake that word, quote, governor, from the word governor found in the scriptures. They are not the same thing. The, quote, governors found in the world today are complete imposters, hijackers, fakes, phonies. They took a word from the Bible and stole it and falsely applied it to themselves to make naive people believe that they have authority from God to do what they do. They do not have authority from God to even take a breath, let alone dictate to people how they're supposed to live their lives. But since people are condemned by their words, that's what Jesus said, I don't have a problem at all using their own words against them and exposing their wickedness. Well, in regards to the freaky queer trans agenda, the Jezebel of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer, was quoted in this article as saying, bigotry is bad for business, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer said in a promotional video filmed for Out Leadership. We all know that companies want to invest in places where their employees are safe. And we know that people want to live in places where they have basic rights and control over their own bodies. End quote. I see. So is it that, quote, basic rights and, quote, control over their own bodies, that that's only applicable to the freaks, the queers, and the perverts? Well, I mean, that's interesting because I've had plenty of people call me a freak throughout the years. Absolutely not in the same manner as what this is talking about. But I'm a freak because I refuse to be part of their world. Plain and simple, I do not belong to them. I want nothing from them, and I want to be left alone from them. So since I'm a freak, a nutcase, I should have, quote, basic rights and control over my own body. As in, I should be left alone to obey the laws of God and refuse the statutes of men. And of course, even this fake, quote, Governor Whitmer would say that her beloved freaks, queers, and perverts are supposed to be able to do whatever they want to do, even if it's against the laws of God, unless they cause harm to someone or their property in doing whatever perversion it is that they do. Okay, now God obviously doesn't agree with that, but they don't care one bit about that. But in their world, if it's one policy for the freaks, the queers, and the perverts, then it should be the same policy for everyone that they interact with. Leave us true Christians alone. We have, quote, basic rights, and we have, quote, control over our bodies, which are commanded to do service to the God of creation and Him alone. And God commanded us not to obey the statutes of anyone or anything but Him. Last week, Jerry and I ran into a couple of Baptist, quote, preachers. And one of them asked Jerry and I where we, quote, go to church. Which, you know, it's just so odd to me. I've been so far removed from all of that. Just to hear someone ask me that was just kind of odd. But how do you go to church? Except when you understand that their understanding of, quote, church is, well, I mean, just that. Quote, church is a weekend social organization. The Greek word is ekklesia. It's not kurios or kuriakon. But anyway, big mistake asking me that question. I told him, Baptist preacher, if he would just read the introduction to the 1611 King James Bible, he would see that even they admitted that they didn't have the authority to use the word, quote, church. But they did it anyway. I explained that ecclesia means the government of God and that we are called to pull people out of the governments of men and into the government of God. And of course, he immediately responded that we're supposed to be in the governments of men. And I said, we all have a choice by what government we will be governed by. Just like Joshua said, choose you this day. Who will be your government? Either the God of the Bible or your fathers on the other side of the Potomac. We all have a choice of government. Well, friends, this generation, and for many generations prior to this one, have gotten this wrong. Completely wrong. Dead wrong. You are not bound to a particular, quote, government. Simply because of where you were born, it doesn't work that way. At least it doesn't work that way with God. You're bound to the statutes of any particular, quote, government because you make that choice, including the government of God. You choose to be governed by the government of God. You know, I've said this before. I just can't imagine anyone with even half a brain being faced with this decision. All right, standing to the left of you is a set of books that stretches from the ground to the sky. You can't even see the end of the books. And those are the, quote, law, statutes, and ordinances of the U.S. And you also see a mountain of debt that every U.S. citizen is obligated to repay through confiscated taxation. And then to your right hand is a small book about 2 inches thick. It's the laws of God. There's no mountain of debt. There's a blueprint for a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And someone asks you, what's your choice? Which one for you? The left hand with its limitless laws, statutes, ordinances, rules, regulations, mountains of debt? Or the right hand with just a few do's and don'ts and limitless freedom and prosperity. No one, no one in their right mind would choose what's behind the door on the left. If they truly believed that they had a free choice in the matter, no one would choose the door on the left. But the problem is, there's these really evil people standing around with guns and knives and all sorts of other sinister weapons, making people believe that if they choose the door on the right, then they'll use all those sinister weapons against them. So out of fear, people choose the path going to the left. And why? Okay, it is fear. Of course it's fear, but that fear comes about because before they are even old enough to make that choice, almost all of the people have had the knowledge of God removed out of their lives. In the times in which we live, the easy choice, the obvious choice, the no-brainer choice of choosing the God of the Bible has been removed from almost all the people, because the God of the Bible is mainly just a fairy tale today. It's stories written by creepy old men from hundreds of years ago that have been proven as folly, mainly because science, modern science, has proved that what those men wrote down hundreds of years ago has been proven wrong. And if the Bible is proven wrong by science on any level, in regards to anything in life, then the book is not reliable, it's not to be trusted, and the God of the Bible is not real. So, even though there are two choices available for all men everywhere today, they choose all the slavery that the door on the left offers, because there's no real safety to be found behind the door on the right, because the words of Jesus have no real meaning, no real value, and they can't be trusted. I mentioned a few weeks ago that I hope many of you will not be disappointed with this series on creation. I mean, even if it actually becomes a series on creation, mainly because I don't even know how far we'll get into it. There's not really going to be anything new necessarily that I can bring to you. I mean, most of you already have done so much study on the issues. I'd even say that some of you, maybe even most of you, know more about the issues than I do. I mean, it literally takes about 5 to 10 minutes to watch some videos on YouTube to know what a con job NASA has pulled on people with their $68.3 million daily budget. I mean, that figure was from 2021. $23.3 billion per year. And why? What is this for? Well, it's not so that they can go to the moon. They can't go to the moon. It's not so they can go to Mars. They can't go to Mars. It's so William Shatner can go where no man has gone before. It's for one thing, and I mean this with every ounce of being that I have. It is for the purpose of making people believe that there is no God. And I know all the propaganda that NASA is filled with many, quote, Christians. And on their way to the moon, they looked out the window and made a statement about God and all that psyop. NASA is in place to make people believe there is no God. And it's as simple as this. If there is no God, then there is no choice as to which government you will obey. If there is no God, the only choice you have is to obey the U.S. quote government, and that's what it's all about. NASA has stated on their website that Earth was created billions of years ago by the Big Bang Theory. This is taken directly from the NASA website. The link is in the notes. Explore cosmic history. Study how the universe evolved, learn about the fundamental forces, and discover what the cosmos is made of. Overview. The origin, evolution, and nature of the universe have fascinated and confounded humankind for centuries. New ideas and major discoveries made during the 20th century transformed cosmology, the term for the way we conceptualize and study the universe, although much remains unknown. Big Bang and nucleosynthesis. When cosmic inflation stopped, the energy driving it transferred to matter and light, the Big Bang. 1 second after the Big Bang, the universe consisted of an extremely hot 18 billion degrees Fahrenheit, or 10 billion degrees Celsius, primordial soup of light and particles. In the following minutes, an era called nucleosynthesis, protons and neutrons collided and produced the earliest elements, hydrogen, helium, and traces of lithium and beryllium. After 5 minutes, most of today's helium had formed, and the universe had expanded and cooled enough that further element formation stopped in 5 minutes. At this point, though, the universe was still too hot for the atomic nuclei of these elements to catch electrons and form complete atoms. The cosmos was opaque because a vast number of electrons created a sort of fog that scattered light. Recombination. Around 380,000 years after the Big Bang, okay, not 400,000 years or 300,000 years, not 250,000 years. It was around 380,000 years after the Big Bang. Okay, the Big Bang occurred about 13.8 billion years ago. Okay, not 13.7, not 13.9. I mean, 13.8 billion years ago, the Big Bang occurred. And then a second after that, 5 minutes after that, and then 380,000 years after that, the universe had cooled enough that atomic nuclei could capture electrons, a period astronomers called the epoch of recombination. This had two major effects on the cosmos. First, with most electrons now bound into atoms, there were no longer enough free ones to completely scatter light, and the cosmic fog cleared. The universe became transparent, and for the first time, light could freely travel over great distances. Second, the formation of these first atoms produced its own light. This glow, still detectable today, is called the cosmic microwave background. It is the oldest light that we can observe in the universe. On this NASA webpage, there's a cartoon. Of course, it's a cartoon. With a caption that says, quote, "Scientists used 9 years of data from NASA's Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy probe to create this detailed all-sky image of the cosmic microwave background. The image reveals 13.8 billion-year-old temperature fluctuations shown as different colors, seeds that grew into the galaxies we see today." End quote. Okay, so in 9 years, they were able to figure out and tell us what took place 13.8 billion years ago. That is insane. And I'll just go on and say it. Anyone that believes this nonsense is either insane already or on the verge of it. And while I make a statement like that, how about this one? Who in their right mind would voluntarily choose to be governed by a government that has, listen to this, this is just in relation to the U.S. quote tax code, and it's from 2014. Now remember, this is just the quote tax code, and it's for the federal, okay, it's not the states, counties, the cities, etc. How many words are in the tax code, April 15, 2014, by Joseph Bishop Henchman? The tax code is huge and complex, but how huge and complex is it? Andrew Grossman, the legislation counsel for the Joint Committee on Taxation that helps write tax laws, attacked us in Slate yesterday for saying that the tax code runs 70,000 pages, countering that it's only 2,600 pages. So how long is the U.S. tax code really? Well, there are a couple of ways to look at it. Statutes. There's the literal statutes that Congress has passed, Title 26 of the U.S. Code. The government printing office sells its spread over two volumes, and according to them, Book 1 is 1,404 pages, and Book 2 is 1,248 pages, for a total of 2,652 pages. At perhaps 450 words per page, that puts the tax code at well over 1 million words. By way of comparison, the King James Bible has 788,280 words, War and Peace runs 560,000 words, and the Harry Potter series is just over 1 million words. Statutes and regulations. However, a tax practitioner who relies just on the tax statutes will go to jail because so much of the federal tax law is in IRS regulations, revenue rulings, and other clarifications. Congress will set down a policy and leave it to the IRS to write all the rules to implement it. These regulations aren't short. The National Taxpayer Advocate did a Microsoft Word count of the tax statutes and IRS regulations in 2012 and came up with roughly 4 million words. Again, at roughly 450 words per page, that comes out to around 9,000 pages. The National Taxpayer Advocate also noted that the tax code changed 4,680 times from 2001 to 2012, an average of once per day. Statutes, regulations, and case law. But a lawyer who relies just on cases and regulations isn't a very good lawyer, because most court decisions are made on the basis of previously decided cases. The respected legal publisher Commerce Clearinghouse puts out such a compilation, the Standard Federal Tax Reporter, of 70,000 pages with notations after each statute containing relevant cases and other information. CCH itself considers this volume to be representative of the tax code, since an expert needs to know all 70,000 pages to understand the tax code in full. CCH has put out colorful charts illustrating its growth over the years. We use that information for the basis of a chart we did illustrating tax complexity over time. Then from the Law Librarians of Congress back in 2013, an article entitled Frequent Reverence Question, How Many Federal Laws Are There? This is from 2013. The following is a guest post by Shamima Rahman, Senior Legal Research Specialist in our Public Services Division. Shamima is a frequent contributor to In Custodia Legis. Her most recent post was entitled Presidential Signing Statements. At the reference desk, we are frequently asked to estimate the number of federal laws in force. However, trying to tally this number is nearly impossible. If you think the answer to this question can be found in the volumes of the statutes at large, you're partially correct. The statutes at large is a compendium that includes all the federal laws passed by the U.S. Congress. However, a total count of laws passed does not exist, for the fact that some laws are completely new, some are passed to amend existing laws, and others completely repeal old laws. Moreover, this set does not include any case law or regulatory provisions that have the force of law. Two of the shelves holding volumes of the U.S. statutes at large in the Law Library of Congress Reading Room. What about the United States Code? The current code has 51 titles and multiple volumes. It would be very time-consuming to go page by page to count each federal law, and it also does not include case law or regulatory provisions. While we're on the topic, would you like to know the difference between the United States Code and the statutes at large? According to the Government Printing Office, the statutes at large is the permanent collection of all laws and resolutions enacted during each session of Congress. The laws are arranged by public law number and are published in the statutes at large. The set also includes concurrent resolutions, proclamations, proposed and ratified amendments to the Constitution, and reorganization plans. Until 1948, treaties and international agreements approved by the Senate were also published in the statutes at large. This set is organized by year, so if you're interested in locating the laws passed in 1996, you need to consult the volumes for that year. As for the United States Code, the Government Printing Office explains that, quote, the United States Code is the codification by subject matter of the general and permanent laws of the United States. It's divided by broad subjects into 51 titles and published by the Office of the Law Revision Council of the U.S. House of Representatives. It is clear that the United States Code is a compilation of laws arranged by subject. However, similar to the statutes at large, it does not include case law or regulatory provisions. In an example of a failed attempt to tally up the number of laws on a specific subject area, in 1982, the Justice Department tried to determine the total number of criminal laws. In a project that lasted 2 years, the department compiled a list of approximately 3,000 criminal offenses. This effort, headed by Ronald Gaynor, a Justice Department official, is considered the most exhaustive attempt to count the number of federal criminal laws. In a Wall Street Journal article about this project, quote, "This effort came as part of a long and ultimately failed campaign to persuade Congress to revise the criminal code, which by the 1980s was scattered among 50 titles and 23,000 pages of federal law. Or, as Mr. Gaynor characterized this fruitless project, you will have died and been resurrected three times and still not have an answer to this question." If you're interested in learning more about U.S. statutes, regulations, or case law, attend one of our legal research classes. Additionally, we have many research guides on our website, blah, blah, blah. So I'm the one that's the nutcase. I'm the one that's insane for saying, on the left hand, I have, by their own statement, laws that are nearly impossible to tally. And on the right hand, I've got a single book that's barely 2 inches thick. And I say, I'll just take that one. And I'm the crazy one. And then I read from NASA on their website about their version of creation that supposedly started 13.8 billion years ago from a Big Bang theory, which they, a small display of honesty, actually. They don't even try to tell you where the Big Bang came from. But I'm supposed to believe all that nonsense as opposed to in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and I'm the nut. Okay. The NASA website continues, and I'm supposed to believe this. You're supposed to believe this. This is stated as fact. It's not stated as a guess or even an educated guess. These are the facts. This is the way it was. We've got a $23.3 billion a year budget, and we've studied this, and we know what we're talking about, and this is the truth. Dark ages. After the cosmic microwave background, the universe again became opaque at shorter wavelengths due to the absorbing effects of all those all those hydrogen atoms. And for the next 200 million years, okay, not 150 million, not 170, not 200 million years now, the universe remained dark. There were no stars to shine. The cosmos at this point consisted of a sea of hydrogen atoms, helium, and trace amounts of heavier elements. First stars. Gas was not uniformly distributed throughout the universe. Cooler areas of space were lumpier, with denser clouds of gas. As these clumps grew more massive, their gravity attracted additional matter. As they became denser and more compact, the centers of these clumps became hotter, hot enough eventually that nuclear fusion occurred in their centers. These were the first stars. They were 30 to 300 times more massive than our sun, and millions of times brighter. Over several hundred million years, the first stars collected into the first galaxies. Reionization. At first, starlight couldn't travel far because it was scattered by the relatively dense gas surrounding the first stars. Gradually, the ultraviolet light emitted by these stars broke down, or ionized, hydrogen atoms in the gas into their constituent electrons and protons. As this reionization progressed, starlight traveled farther, breaking up more and more hydrogen atoms. By the time the universe was 1 billion years old, not 500 million years, or 1.2 billion, or by the time the universe was 1 billion years old, stars and galaxies had transformed nearly all this gas, making the universe transparent to light as we see it today. The future. For many years, scientists thought the universe's current expansion was slowing down. But in fact, cosmic expansion is speeding up. In 1998, astronomers found that certain supernovae, bright stellar explosions, were fainter than expected. They concluded this could only happen if the supernovae had moved farther away at a faster rate than predicted. Scientists suspect a mysterious substance they call dark energy is accelerating expansion. Future research may yield new surprises, but cosmologists suggest it's likely the universe will continue to expand forever. End quote. surely I'm not the only one in the room who notices conspicuously that there is not even the slightest mention of in the beginning God created. There's not a single thing in here that even alludes to the existence of God. There's nothing here that says, this is how we think God created the heaven and the earth. Nothing. And then you have these wicked, evil, miscreant 501c3 government mouthpieces like Andy Stanley and others who say that the creation account according to the Bible is a myth. Why? Because science says so. Are you serious? Surely that's a joke. I read what NASA says about creation and I laugh and I call that a myth. That's a story. That's fantasy. That's Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek with all that ridiculous storytelling. And I'm supposed to take that and call the Genesis account of creation a myth? No thanks. I'll just stay in my own insanity. I'll stay in my own fantasy world because their fantasy world is so far nuts. It's my belief that only lunatics can fall for that. You're so smart that you can tell me what happened 13.8 billion years ago, and then you can even tell me what happened in 5 minutes after those 5 minutes after the 13.8 billion years started. You can tell me what happened 380,000 years after the 13.8 billion year clock started, and I'm supposed to believe that? Anyone that would believe that could so easily be persuaded to accept men's little g quote governments as their God, their lawmaker, the one who tells them where to go, what to do, and what to say. As simple as that is, that's the reason why NASA is in place. And not just NASA. All the quote governments of the world, Japan, India, China, Russia, all of them. Their, quote, space agencies are in place to do one major thing, and that is to solidify their hold on the minds of the people to make them believe that they have no choice in government. They have no choice to obey, but to obey the, quote, government on the land of their birth. And every single one of those, quote, governments campaigns on the lie that all men and women have, quote, freedom, liberty, and choice. And any other catchphrase that makes them feel warm and fuzzy about their, quote, government. I'm telling you, the purpose of casting doubt on the Genesis account of creation, no matter who is doing it, no matter where it comes from, ultimately is for the purpose of preventing people from seeking and finding the government of God. And it's for the preservation and advancement of the little g, quote, governments of men. And before we get to the obvious place, Genesis chapter 1, I want us to go all the way to the ending days of the Old Covenant, just prior to the beginning days of the New Covenant. This message, this series of messages, no matter how long or short is for the purpose of it's for the purpose of making the true saints of God more bold in their stand for the kingdom government of Christ, knowing that the whole world is against us. We need the power of God, which comes from the knowledge of His word, in order to stand for what we know is right, to stand for the invisible things that we know are right in a world that's gone crazy, in a world that has turned everything good into evil and everything evil into good. This fight, this contention for the Genesis account of creation is not new. It's been around for a long, long time. Paul dealt with it. And here's what God had Paul write in the first century. I want you to turn for a few minutes to Romans chapter 1, and we'll begin in verse 1. Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, separated unto the gospel of God, which he had promised afore by his prophets in the Holy Scriptures. Paul said he was separated. The Greek word for separated is aphorizo. Mr. Thayer says it means to mark off from others by boundaries, to limit, to separate from others, from those unwilling to obey the gospel. Unwilling to obey the gospel. What does that mean? That is people who refuse to be governed by the government of Christ. That is people who refuse to bow the knee Every knee is supposed to bow. Every tongue is supposed to confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. That is people who choose the left door, the governments of men, with all their millions of pages of laws, statutes, ordinances, rules, and regulations. And they made their choice. It's man over Christ. It's where do you go to church? Instead of who's your lawmaker? Where's your citizenship? And verse 3 proves it. Concerning his son, Jesus Christ, our Lord, which was made of the seed of David according to the flesh. What difference does the seed of David make? Well, Jesus Christ, the King, the one who was to take David's throne, the promised throne that was to be in place forever, the one and only, the last of the kings that God allows for his creation. Jesus Christ, our Lord, the one who is supreme in authority. And Paul will eventually be used by God to write down and record why there are people who refuse this and what their motivation is. Declared to be the Son of God with power according to the Spirit of holiness by the resurrection from the dead, by whom we have received grace and apostleship for obedience to the faith among all nations for his name. And again, this is why I say all the time, the government of Christ, the lordship of Christ, the kingship of Christ, it's not restricted to land. It's not land-based like the little g governments of men are. This is a faith. It's a system of belief for all nations, among all nations, for his name, for his authority. His authority, his government has no boundaries. Among whom you're also called, among whom are ye also the called of Jesus Christ. Called of Jesus Christ. Christ is his title. It's not his name. Christ means the anointed king. To all that be in Rome, beloved of God, called to be saints, grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. First, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. For God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers, making request if by any means now at length I might have a prosperous journey by the will of God to come unto you. For I long to see you, that I may impart unto you some spiritual gift, to the end you may be established. That is, that I may be comforted together with you by the mutual faith both of you and me. Now, I would not have you ignorant, brethren, that oftentimes I purposed to come unto you, but was let hitherto, that I might have some fruit among you also, even as among other Gentiles. I am debtor both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and to the unwise. So as much as in me is, I'm ready to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome also. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. For it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Judahite first, and also to the Greek. This is where we need to be. This is the mindset that we need to have to exist in the rebellious generation that we're in. I am not ashamed of the gospel, the good news that Jesus Christ is King. The good news that we can all choose the door on the right. The good news that we all have a choice in the God that we will serve. The God whose laws we will obey. This is good news. It's the best news. And we must never be ashamed. No matter what they say, no matter what they threaten, no matter what they do, we are not ashamed of the gospel of the government of Christ and the citizenship in the commonwealth of Israel. For therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. As we embark on living the Christian life that Paul is speaking about here, we learn more and more each time we come obedient. The more we learn, the more we trust, the more we live accordingly, the righteousness of God is revealed, showing us how to live in an ungodly world. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it unto them. Now watch. This is the main reason that I came to this chapter this morning. for the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. It all starts at Genesis 1:1. Paul says his creation is clearly seen. It's really simple. It's easy. You know, before Stephen Hawking died in his final book, he wrote this, quote, "We are each free to believe what we want, and it's my view that the simplest explanation is that there is no God. No one created the universe, and no one directs our fate. This leads me to a profound realization. There is probably no heaven and afterlife either. I think belief in an afterlife is just wishful thinking. There's no reliable evidence for it, and it flies in the face of everything we know in science," end quote. Okay, wait a minute. Wait just a minute here. This guy was supposed to be really smart, but just dissect what he said for just a minute. This is right after he blasphemed God with his "no one created the universe and no one directs our fate" statement. Then he says this. "This leads me to a profound realization." Okay, what is a profound realization, Mr. Hawking? Well, the modern dictionary defines realization as coming to understand something clearly and distinctly. So in his book, he says that he has come to understand something clearly and distinctly. This is a profound understanding. Well, the modern dictionary defines profound as very great or intense. So the brilliant Stephen Hawking has a very great or intense, clear and distinct understanding. And here it is. There is probably no heaven and afterlife either. That's your very great or intense, clear and distinct understanding, that there's probably no heaven or afterlife. Probably? How can these people persuade anyone of their beliefs? Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. The foolish said that there is no God. Verse 21 is talking about people who once knew God but turned their back on him. I don't know if Hawking ever claimed God. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he went to Sunday school as a little kid and then began openly despising God when he developed his Lou Gehrig's disease at age 20. I don't know. But God told Paul to write these things that these types of people became vain in their imaginations and their foolish hearts were darkened. You tell people that you've concluded a profound realization, and then in the next breath, you use the word probably. Okay, that doesn't sound very profound or very real. It sounds very double-minded to me. And it sounds like you've lived life a certain way, and now that you're at the end of it, you just hope there is no God. That's what you hope. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. You try to tell people that you know what happened 13.8 billion years ago. Not 13.7, not 13.785, not 12.9 billion years ago. You know a Big Bang happened 13.8 billion years ago. You're professing yourself as wise. And for the ungullible, you're some of the biggest fools that have ever lived. You tell people it only took you 9 years to figure all this out, all these 13.8 billion years, and you figured it out in 9 years? Who in their right mind would believe these people? This is just nuts. It's crazy. You have changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. That is everywhere. It's everywhere we look today. They changed the truth of God into a lie and worshiped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. They need to be spending their $60 million a day seeking for the Creator instead of using their vast stolen resources to worship creation and deny the Creator. For this cause God gave them up unto vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. When people deny the Creator, when they deny in the beginning God created, this is the result. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was meet. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. Many of the 501c3 government mouthpiece, quote, churches that are apologists for NASA prove again who they are and what they are, defending an organization that tries to tell people about creation, how it all began, and there's not one single mention of God in their knowledge. That's beyond disgraceful, and God gave up on them. God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do things which are not convenient. Not convenient, things that are improper, things that are not fitting, they're even shameful and forbidden. Being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. And it all begins with a denial of the Creator. The breakdown begins when men attack the Genesis account of creation. It's not a harmless disagreement when people attack what the Bible says about God's creation. It's not just a perspective disagreement concerning what the Bible says about the sun, the moon, and the stars. To deny that there are waters above the earth and waters beneath the earth, that ends with all the fulfillment of the things that God told Paul to write down in Romans chapter 1. And ultimately, denying the Genesis account of creation, calling it a myth. Good grief. That just didn't come from the ilks of the Stephen Hawkings or the Neil deGrasse Tysons. That came from a lily-white Southern Baptist, quote, preacher, unhitching from the God of the Old Testament and the myth of creation. It's no wonder things are the way they are. Well, my plan is to get deeper into the Genesis account of creation, calling on those who claim the name of Jesus Christ to stand for his truth in a world that has a great intent realization that probably there is no God. Turn to Genesis chapter 1. In closing this morning, we'll just read several verses of Genesis chapter 1, and then we'll pick up here again next week. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said, Let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called light. And the evening and the morning were the first day. And God said, Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning were the second day. And God said, Let the waters under the heaven be gathered together unto one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth. And the gathering together of the waters called he seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the tree and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass and herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit whose seed was in itself after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the third day. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. And God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the fourth day. And God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life, and fowl that may fly upon the earth, above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. And God created great whales and every living creature that moveth, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let fowl multiply in the earth. And the evening and the morning were the fifth day. And God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beasts of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day.
You've been listening to God Send Us Men Ministries with evangelist and missionary to America, Charlie Stewart. To contact us or to read and listen to more teachings online for free, visit godsendusmen.com.